thought for today. If someone speaks unkindly of me, I live so no one will believe it. If someone speaks unkindly of me, I live so no one will believe it. What's your thought about that? Can people say unkind things about you and other people believe them because they doubt you? Do you doubt yourself? You see, a lot of times we're teachers, and we forget that we're teachers. Sylvie's a teacher, Ingeborg's a teacher, Anita's a teacher, and Ellen's a teacher. You share as teachers. And so, when you're teaching, and you're giving a lecture, for instance, we have to be very careful that we don't say a doubtful word about ourselves. Now, I used the law of cause and effect, and I put a cause in motion, and it happened. I guess I did the right thing. I guess it worked. You see, when you say, I guess, you're putting doubt on it. You say, it is the law of cause and effect, and it did work. You have to be very positive. So it is, how do you live your life? Do you live your life in such a manner that people think you might be a thief? Or that people might think you might have done something unkind, or that you might have hurt somebody? Do you live your life in such a way that people think that you might be an evil person? Or that you might do something that's negative? If you do, then don't be surprised. If someone speaks unkindly of you, and you're living that way, everybody's going to believe it. But I was reading in the Business Week magazine today, that came today, and in there, it spoke about a man who I believe was in San Francisco, and he was the CEO and president of a major cosmetic firm and women's clothing firm. And he is extremely successful. His firm is so successful that they don't have to be mean to anybody. Well, a reporter came to talk to him, the reporter who wrote this same article here. The reporter came to talk to him in 96 and said to him, you know, tell me about your successes. And the man said, we are a success because we are honest. And I don't mean just pat ourselves on the back, we're honest. We will not do a negative deal. We will not cheat or steal or do something dishonest, much like the code of ethics for Amway. We will not do something that is going to hurt anybody or take. We don't need to. Not that we don't need to, we just don't do it because that's not our nature. Throughout all of our years in business, we have never done that. And this man began to have a problem. But he was absolutely honest in his business dealings. Every business that was taken on task for doing things dishonorably, for doing, not keeping their books correctly and stuff like that, this man's business was spotless. Spotless. And a couple of years passed, and this man died. He died of a brain tumor, of cancer. And his whole life had been spotless. His whole life had been dedicated to truth, to principles of doing things right. Did he get his reward? You say, well, death is not really the big deal. But did he get his reward? What was his reward? That he did what he believed was right. That's all. He did what he believed was right. And he cheated nobody. He kept honest books. He kept honest corporate papers and everything else. He did what he felt was right. Now people say, well, why did he die of cancer? Why did that have to happen? Such a nice man. You know, he's so young. You know, he's just in his 50s or something like that. And why did it have to happen to him? Why did it have to happen to him? Hey, you don't ask the question, why did it happen? You say, how did the man live his life? Was he a noble being? Did you ever doubt his integrity? Could you doubt his integrity? No. It's beyond doubt. His integrity is beyond any comment by anybody. You follow? Now, that truly is reward of living. Now, if he has that illness, if he has that sickness that took his life, what about the person who has a heart attack? Oh, dear, they're cut short in their prime. Why did they have cancer? Why did they have a heart attack? Why did they die? There's a young man. He's a very fine young man. He was brilliant, absolutely brilliant. And he was 18. And he created all sorts of fabulous ideas and made corporations out of them, and the corporations sold to other corporations for millions of dollars. And then, when he turned 21, he died. He was loaded with money. He was ready to go out and enjoy life and whatever. But did he enjoy life before he reached 21? Oh, my, yes. Did he do the things that were delightful to him? You know what he did? At 18, he had this company created, which was worth about $8 million, and he sold it. And with that money, he bought four other corporations that were not doing too well. And within 1 year, he had them all straightened out and sold each one of them for another $8 million or better. I mean, he was just swinging high. And his corporations were doing just great. And he just was challenged by the opportunity to use his genius to make them run successful. Once they're successful, he played his game. So he released them. Now, why did he die at 21? It matters not. He lived his whole life, the 21 years, as a genius, as a fantastic person, as a glorious person, the prime of his life. He had no illnesses. He had no problems. He had no body pains. He had no mental problems. He was a brilliant, sociable, very, very charming young man. And he died. He died. Now, we don't ask why. If we ask why, we say, why did Jesus die at 33, you know? Why do a lot of things happen? We don't ask those questions. We ask the only question that there is. If someone speaks unkindly of me, I live so no one will believe it. I live so no one will believe it. You say, well, Herb, what about you? What about other people? Do you live so no one will believe it? Yes, I do. But you see, I'm an actor. I'm a sharer. I sound angry at you from time to time. I sound terrible to you from time to time. You think, my goodness sakes. Ron Hubbard, who wrote tremendous science fiction books and who started Scientology and developed it into quite an operation. One time he was on his yacht out in the Atlantic Ocean, and he had a number of guests, and different people came to his stateroom, and they wanted to talk to him about philosophy. And so he talked to them about philosophy. And as he was talking to them about philosophy, he was explaining to them how their thoughts are things, and they have the power in their mind to do anything they want to do. His philosophy is the Dianetics. It's a very positive philosophy. And many, many people find it very favorable to them. And he talked to these people, they were not listening. And he said, come on, now listen. I'm sharing with you. You asked for this. Well, I'm listening to what I want to listen to. Well, if that's the case, then I am not ready to share with you what I have. How dare you say you're not ready to share? Get out of here. If I'm not ready to share, I'm not ready to share. You're the listener. You're the student. I'm the teacher. If you don't like me as a teacher, run out. And people heard that on deck, you know, they just heard the shouting. And then they thought Ron Hubbard was a very ungracious man and a very, perhaps, negative man. But he does that. If the student is not ready to learn, the teacher brushes them off. You don't have to do it with a loud voice, but sometimes that's the only voice to hear. You say, if you're not ready to learn, then please leave. And, no, I'm here because I want to say, if you're not ready to learn, then please leave. No, I'm ready. Leave! You see? You have to be firm with them sometimes. And in the process, those who are not privy, those who are not aware of everything that's going on, think that you are capable of violence. You are capable of anger. You are capable of evil beingness, evil thoughts, evil actions. You follow that? And so, these are things that can happen. These are things that can happen. I work with people of all types. Some people are ready to be spoken gently to and respond gently. And you see, they live so that I will always speak gently to them. Other people, they don't have gentle comments get through to them. They are beyond that. They are talking in such a way that the gentle comments never reach them. And so they live in such a way that I believe gentle comments are not going to reach them. So there are many teachers, and I've had many of them. There are many teachers who are exquisite teachers. And these teachers get up before the class. And they don't do anything. They just stand there. And when the students have all calmed down, then they say, "Now we begin. Now we'll discuss this philosophy." And he speaks in a low but definite voice. His voice carries wonderfully to those who want to hear it. And to those who don't hear it, they don't hear it. But he taught classes that I had attended. And his classes were very widely attended, very fully attended. And he did that in every class. He did not raise his voice once. He spoke loud enough so everyone could hear, but he did not raise his voice. And some of the students could have, before the class started, been cause for raising their voice. But he would not begin the class until everyone was in order. And sometimes he had to wait a few minutes. But that only lasted for the first week of class. After that, every single person was in their chair ahead of time. They had their pencil and paper out ahead of time. They were quiet ahead of time. You see? They were ready. Now, if someone speaks unkindly of you, do you live so that no one would believe it? If someone says to you, "Are you a good student?" And I say, "No, they're not a good student. They don't listen." Well, how do you know they don't listen? Because I've had them in classes and they didn't listen. Now, why is that so terribly important? Knowledge is available only to those who are willing to listen. Now, it's not a matter of listening outwardly, that too, but listen inwardly. Now just consider. Consider that you are a tree, and that in the branch of your tree, the birds have built a nest. And in the nest, they've laid eggs. And these eggs have little chicks in them. And you're the tree. And within you is this nest. And this nest is rather noisy sometimes. And of course, when it's noisy, nothing much can be done. So you, as the consciousness for the nest, say to yourself, "All is in order." You say to yourself, "All is in peace." And when you say to yourself, "All is in order and all is in peace," then all is in order and all is in peace. And then your students, whoever they may be, will hear very clearly everything that you have to say. They will hear very clearly all of the great concepts that you have to give. They'll hear it very clearly. But if you don't take charge of that nest within you, if you don't quiet those little chicks in that little nest within you, they will disturb you. They'll upset you. They'll disturb you and upset you so you do not hear the message. Now, when a teacher teaches, is the message coming from outside? Can anyone tell me why the message does not come from outside?
Because it speaks from, it speaks without any references. It speaks from his heart.
The message does not come from the outside because the message is here. We interpret that message as it comes to our ears, and then we hear what we have interpreted. We can hear noise and we can interpret it as anger, and then it's for us anger. But it may not be anger. It may be all the children playing outside, screaming their heads off, just having a good time. And we think it's anger. We rush out to bring peace out there. Hey, they don't want peace. They want to scream. That's part of the game. They're having a good time. But you see, we have to be in charge because we interpret. We interpret everything through ourselves. Now, I live so that everyone will believe kindly about me. What do I do that people will believe kindly about me? Well, I think kind thoughts. I do kind actions. I love. Now, do you do that? Do you think kind thoughts? Do you love? Do you do kind actions? If you do, then you're wonderful. If you don't, then you're putting a cause in motion for yourself, which is not very good. Do you understand? You are the voice that hears everything that comes to you from whatever sources. You can tune in your consciousness to a radio station. You can tune in your consciousness to 100 years ago. You can tune into your consciousness and know all things. All things. Why don't you? Why don't you tune into your consciousness so you know all things? Well, the reason you don't do it is because you don't believe it. Looking at that iris out there, the red one, is far more real than looking at an iris within my heart, you think. Yet that iris is out there in the yard and the windows are closed. You don't smell it. You look at the one in your heart and you can smell it. You can feel it. You can delight in it, if you wish. But do we wish? You see, we tell ourselves that we believe in ourselves. We tell ourselves that we are kind people, that we're wonderful people. But are we truly? We're not. We're not at all. When we let conditions in the world disturb us. If someone speaks unkindly of me, I live so that no one will believe it. Do you live so no one will believe it? Do you live so that no one would ever judge you in an unkind way? Work on it. Work on it. It does function. Just work on it. And when you work on it, then you'll have all in order. When you work on it, then all is in divine order. We live our life so beautifully and so lovely that everything works out perfect for us. Just remember that. If someone speaks unkindly of me to another, I live so that no one will believe it. No one will believe it. Are you aware of that? No one will believe it because that's the way I live. And so it is, and I love you.